Welcome to the Western Canadian Animal Health Network's Veterinary Podcast. Today, we'll be talking about the top health risks for swine that are raised in small-scale or backyard production systems. And we'll also share some tips on how to set up your herd health plan and form a good working relationship with your herd veterinarian. My name is Dr. Kate Todd. I'm a veterinarian. And today I'm speaking with Dr. Jessica Law, who is a swine veterinarian and who works with Prairie Swine Health Vet Services in Alberta. Thanks for joining me today, Dr. Law.
Thank you very much for having me.
So for a while now, we've been seeing an increase in people who are raising pigs in a wide variety of settings in Western Canada. I think everything from heritage breed operations to homesteaders raising a few pigs on their hobby farm. Why do you think we're seeing this new niche of pig farming?
There is a really unique demand right now for sort of small operations or a couple people with a hobby farm. Just from the owners themselves, the producers themselves wanting those pigs on their site, maybe for a bit of variety, maybe a little bit of a diversification of their farm, but also from the niche industries like the restaurant industries looking for different types of proteins for their menus, or the markets that want to sell something a little bit different to not so much distance themselves, but to differentiate themselves from the sort of mainstream protein that you're seeing at the supermarkets. And this is something that's become really popular across all different types of products, whether it's animal protein or vegetables or fruit. People are trying to find a way to make their product unique. And I think this is something that's happened with pork protein as well. So producers are trying to find something different that a restaurant can put on their menu, or perhaps a market can sell in form of sausage or something that allows them to differentiate themselves. The couple that I've seen that I found to be really interesting have been the Mangalitsa pig, which is like this big furry sheep looking pig from Hungary, I believe. And then the Kuni Kunis are a Polynesian pig. And both of those have really interesting fat to meat ratios or fat to muscle. And so it results in a really unique product. So I think people are interested in that for their own experiences, but also there's a demand from the actual market.
That's pretty interesting, the different breeds. Now I'm going to have to look those up. Are there certain diseases that we'll see in these swine who are raised in smaller scale farms, certain conditions that they might be more prone to getting versus hogs that are raised in more commercial production settings? And why would these types of diseases be more likely?
The most common diseases that we see in these farms tend to be ones that are preventable diseases. So usually parasites or a bacteria called erysipelas that causes fever and diamond skin lesions. Other things that we see are influenza. We also see diseases that we see in commercial herds like Mycoplasma pneumoniae, as well as PRRS, so porcine respiratory and reproductive syndrome. And for the most part, these pigs are not going to be resistant or more resilient to those diseases typically, but in the smaller settings, they're not as densely populated. So you don't have as high of a pathogen load when there is a bacteria or a virus around. That being said, they can still easily spread it to each other. So if you were to introduce a disease or a pathogen into the environment, those pigs could easily become sick. There's probably a more likely possibility of it doing that because the biosecurity, so the ability or the active role in preventing bringing pathogens onto their farms or to their sites, is not as common in small-scale production as it is in large-scale production, where it's like it's a mantra and it's something we do every single day. And a lot of the logistics in large-scale production are solely based on the fact that we're trying to prevent pathogen movement, but you don't see this on small scale farms as frequently. It's becoming more common and we're working with a lot of producers that are doing it really well and modifying it for their farms. But I think this is where you're going to see pathogen introduction, where maybe someone wasn't thinking about it or just the preventative practices weren't happening. So in these cases, like I've seen Mycoplasma and PRRS enter a farm where if they hadn't brought pigs that were sick onto the site, they could have kept it out fairly easily. So I don't think any disease is necessarily more likely or less likely. I think it's just a more of whether or not the preventative practices are actually occurring. And in large scale production, it's more of a day-to-day task and it's very regimented. Whereas in small scale, we're still working on creating that environment or that education and making it sort of a normal day-to-day thing for producers.
Yeah, I think it would be challenging because there's so many different setups on these farms to really tailor biosecurity to each and every type of setting. I think that would be kind of difficult to do if you didn't know about that concept ahead of time. How about exposure to diseases from other farm animals that might be there, say on a hobby farm? Are there risks to pig health that go along with living in a mixed animal environment?
There are absolutely risks to pig health that go along with mixed animal environments. And so they come mostly with poultry and ducks, which carry influenza. So having those three species, so the ducks, the poultry, and the pigs all in the same environment and mixing is not ideal for influenza if it were to be introduced into the herd. Just because those different species all can get influenza, but they are susceptible to different kinds of influenza. So different influenza that has different proteins. And so what happens is they will reassort. So the H and the N that we always hear about will flip around and you can create new strains. You can have genetically changed strains that can cause more or less disease depending on what happens. But it's just not ideal for controlling or minimizing disease. So I always like to recommend, especially in sort of the fall and spring when migration is happening in the wild birds, to keep those separate and to keep the ducks and the poultry in a protected area and the pigs in a protected area so that they're not actively exposed to migrating birds. And then just to prevent your animals from getting sick. But if one of those species was to get sick, to keep them away from the other species because they are susceptible. Other species like horses can shed parasites that pigs can get, and there's every so often there's a disease that will jump between a species. So mixing species on a farm is something that should be done with intention, and it should be really well understood what's occurring in your herd before you start sort of mixing everybody around. Because I realize it can be like kind of fun and nice to have everyone mixed together because it's interesting to watch them interact. But just thinking about it before it's done and doing a little research and talking to your veterinarian is always advisable.
Just because you mentioned influenza, can pigs get influenza from people and vice versa?
No, that's a great question. So pigs absolutely can get influenza from people, and people are more likely to give influenza to pigs. So people are much more likely to get influenza, not be sick, but be shedding the virus, so producing the virus in their respiratory secretions, and they will share it with the pigs that they're around because you're likely very close to them, near their faces. If you sneeze in the barn, you don't really cover up your cough or whatever if you're near a pig because you're not near another human. But those are all sort of, we talk about respiratory hygiene in this world right now with COVID. It's something that we could practice around our pigs as well when we are sick. So wearing gloves, wearing a mask, all these things can help prevent you from giving influenza to a pig, but it can also protect you from getting influenza from a pig in the event that they are sick. But there are fewer chances of a person getting sick from a pig than a pig getting sick from a person. Most of the influenza I deal with on a day-to-day basis is a result of a human bringing into a barn.
Is there any chance that pigs on these smaller farms might be exposed to diseases from wildlife? And how can farmers minimize the chance of infection?
Yeah, so there's a couple. So as I mentioned, migrating birds can carry influenza. And it's actually quite interesting. So migrating birds stick to their own airstreams. They go on the same migration pattern every year. But if there's outbreaks of disease in different parts of the world and you're in a flight path of those migrating birds, I think we're in Brazil's flight path. So if there's like an influenza outbreak in Brazil, those migrating birds could bring it back to Canada. It's really interesting how the flight paths kind of move the different influenzas. But on top of that, there's stuff outside of migrating birds. So rodents and other wildlife like coyotes, they can carry parasites, and cats. These ones are more concerning to food safety. So toxoplasmosis and another one that is a whipworm that causes like little cysts in the meat. These different diseases can be transmitted by rodents. And so it should always be top of mind to prevent rodents from being near where the animals are eating or where they might consume either the vegetation or the dirt in that area. So just trying to keep them out of the pen and having good rodent control is really helpful. And having really good fencing. So we actually recommend double fencing in outdoor farms. And this is partially for coyotes and protecting your animals, but also preventing disease spread from those coyotes or, say, wild boars. So if you live in an area where there's a wild boar population, it's possible for those wild boar to either break your fences and release your animals or cause damage to your site, but also to transmit disease. Because we don't have a super big experience base in terms of, like, we don't have a lot of experiences with wild boar causing disease in herds, but we never want to rule it out. And we do want to prevent that interface, so that domestic pig and that wild boar pig or that wild pig interface from being a common interaction.
Okay, so we've discussed then a few diseases that swine might get from other farm animals or wildlife, but what would you say are the top pig-specific infectious diseases that producers should know more about?
So the top four diseases that I like to focus on with my producers is erysipelas, porcine circovirus type 2, clostridial diseases, and iron deficiency. So erysipelas is not too common. It's really preventable, and it causes lameness, sudden death, and diamond skin lesions, as well as it can cause heart failure because of some of the lesions or injury it causes to the heart. And so there's a really effective vaccine for this. So this is a vaccine that I recommend that every single pig get, regardless of the health of your herd, regardless of your herd's interaction with other herds. Even if your herd never has a new pig enter your site or you don't have anyone visit, your pigs can get erysipelas. It's in the soil and it lives there for a while. So this is one that I just recommend. It's a really cheap vaccine, so every single pig should be vaccinated for it. Another one that is common is porcine circovirus type 2. And so it's really common in commercial and in small scale farms. And it's one of the most commonly used vaccines in the world. So it's essential for the herd because porcine circovirus type 2 can cause poor doing pigs after weaning. It causes diarrhea. It also causes sudden death. And there's a higher chance that the pigs will get sick from secondary infections because their immune system is compromised. And this one has a very effective vaccine, but it also is untreatable if you get it and you have not vaccinated. So having protection for it instead of trying to manage it once your pigs are infected is definitely the way to go. Iron deficiency is important. So we like to ensure that all our clients understand that pigs need iron within 3 days of being born, regardless of whether they're on dirt or not. There was a really interesting study that actually just came out, and it compared pigs that were given oral iron or soil-enriched iron compared to pigs that were given an injection of iron, as well as pigs that were given an injection of iron and soil-enriched with iron. And the pigs that were given an injection plus soil-enriched with iron did the best. So providing an injectable form of iron is critical, but it's also becoming possible that we could also give an oral form of iron. So that's a really interesting fact, but iron deficiency is a really common disease around small producers, and so highly recommend making sure they have an iron shot on board. Clostridial diseases are hit and miss depending on the farm, but there's so many different types of clostridial diseases that working with your practitioner or your veterinarian to get a clostridial vaccine or decide if you need one is something that I recommend every producer have that conversation, because it's really, there's a lot of preventable diseases that we can save our herd from if we manage it with vaccination. There's other disease conditions like ascarids, that's worms or worms that cause liver spots in pigs. Streptococcus suis, E. coli, and coccidiosis. So these are the diseases that, in discussion with your vet, determining what your risk is in your herd, depending on how many pigs you have, stuff like that, and where they're living, and how you can prevent it overall with your vaccination and medication plan.
So are any of these diseases of more or less concern, given that we've been in this crazy year of 2020, now 2021?
That's a really good question. So a disease that came about in the last few years and has definitely continued to rear its ugly head in 2020 was African swine fever. And so this is a disease caused by a virus, and there's no treatment and there's no vaccine. And for the most part, it is seen in Europe and China and some other of the Eastern Asian countries. What we're seeing is it causes severe disease that we absolutely cannot prevent without euthanizing the entire herd and just stopping the spread of the disease. We're working really hard to prevent it from coming into Canada, but I would say that there really hasn't been anything in 2020 that we saw more of or less of, but African swine fever is always on our radar.
And what about COVID-19? Do we have to worry about this for pigs?
No, so count our blessings. We do not have to worry about COVID-19 in pigs. This was when we first discovered COVID-19 and like when the news started to come out as to what it was. I was praying every day that it would not cause disease in pigs because it would have been awful. And so we saw what happened in mink, and this is the exact same thing would have happened in pigs, but we are so grateful. It does not cause disease in pigs. There's little evidence that pigs can get COVID-19, and there's no evidence they can get sick or spread the disease.
Well, that's a big relief, I think, for a lot of people, but certainly anybody who is raising pigs, whether it's a big commercial farm or whether it's a smaller operation. I know for smaller farms, sometimes it can be really difficult to know exactly when is the right time to call the vet out to see a sick pig. What clinical signs or symptoms would indicate that a producer needs to contact their vet right away to see a sick or an injured pig? Or pigs, I guess, in the herd.
Being a little biased, I definitely recommend having a relationship with a vet. But if you're in a situation where you don't have a vet or you're trying to determine if you need a vet out like right away, any sort of sudden death, respiratory disease, so severe coughing or sneezing, gastroenteric disease, so any diarrhea or vomiting, and or severe injuries, so maybe there's an injury that's causing a movement issue so the pigs can't get to water or they're not eating or drinking normally. Any of those things or fever are absolutely critical for calling your vet out, as well as any sort of reproductive issues. So if you have a sow that's farrowing and there's multiple piglets that are either not born alive or you're getting multiple mummified fetuses, that's not necessarily one where you need to call the vet out ASAP unless there's something like a pig is stuck in the sow and you need help. But that's something where you really should follow up with the veterinarian.
And you mentioned that extremely concerning disease, African swine fever. Are there specific signs of this disease that producers should be on the lookout for? Even though it's not in Canada right now, what should a producer do if they notice any of these specific signs?
Because I haven't actually walked into a farm with African swine fever, from what I've really understood from other practitioners and other producers in other countries that have experienced it, is that if you are seeing animals that are lethargic or have high fevers, or maybe they're huddling, that would be a cause for concern. And that would be a situation where I'd call your vet immediately. Any sudden death in conjunction with animals that have refused to eat or drink despite having available sources of water, and increasing numbers of animals affected day after day, especially ones in close contact with each other. There was a case in the Czech Republic where they had, I think, 5 pigs, and the 4 pigs on the same side of the barn were all affected, and the one across the aisle was not. So it's a disease that moves from like nose-to-nose contact, and so any sort of secretions from the animal will have African swine fever virus in it. So that's where, if the animals are in close contact with each other, those are the ones that are going to get sick. Unfortunately, ASF can also look like a couple other diseases. So there's a disease called classical swine fever, which is also a foreign animal disease that we don't have in Canada. And then you can also see salmonellosis, so basically a severe salmonella infection, or porcine circovirus type 2. And say you were to open up those pigs, if you had one that died, you'd see like a really large spleen, so a really long red organ. The kidneys would be kind of enlarged, larger than normal than you'd see at slaughter or processing. And then just like red hemorrhagic splotches throughout the body cavity.
or on the skin. And you'd also see cyanosis, so the lack of blood flow to the ears or the extremities, and they almost start to turn blue or purple. As a veterinarian, we're required to contact the CFIA immediately, but as a producer, I would recommend contacting your veterinarian. And if you don't have a veterinarian, contacting either the chief veterinary officer of your province, the chief veterinary officer, or the CVO's office. They usually have very supportive staff or veterinarians that will support you if you don't have your own personal herd vet. And then they can go on to help contact the CFIA. And then that way you at least have a secondary or support to help with communication. But as I mentioned, veterinarians are required to contact the CFIA if I was to be on site, and I'd have to stay on site. And then I would support the producer through managing anything that was required by the CFIA. And then on top of that, if you do suspect something that's a foreign animal disease, just minimizing or eliminating any sort of movement from your site. So asking your friend that's bringing hay to stay away for a while, just till you clear up whether this actually is ASF or if it's another situation. But if you have a veterinarian, they are usually incredibly supportive and critical in these situations. So I highly recommend, this is another reason to have a herd health veterinarian, someone there to support you if something untoward like this were to actually happen.
So there must be then like some steps that farmers can take to ensure their pigs are protected against diseases like ASF. What do you think are the most important preventative measures that a producer could take to protect their pigs from ASF or other diseases?
In my opinion, feeding practices are likely the highest risk event or opportunity to introduce African swine fever into a herd, as well as foreign visitors coming straight from a farm in which ASF is prevalent, maybe in a country where there's ASF. So in Canada, we've not seen ASF and we don't have it in our pigs or our wild pigs, but the biggest risk of infection is likely through infected meat products from affected countries. Our CFIA and our border control are doing the best they can to make sure that they regulate and they stay on top of African swine fever breaks so that meat from countries that are affected is not coming into Canada. But the unfortunate thing is that African swine fever is not moving as quickly. It's not as severe as it was when it first started. Like, we're seeing a lot more chronic cases. So you may not actually find it for maybe 10 to 15 days after it shows up on the farm. And so they could have already sent pigs to slaughter. So it doesn't affect humans, but if you were to feed that meat to pigs, you would spread the disease. So uncooked meat products, that includes anything that's cured, so like deli meat or sausage, anything that's uncooked is going to contain ASF. And certain raw products and bones can hold ASF for up to almost a year, or frozen carcasses rather. And so these are really critical. So if you're using any sort of food or table scraps or anything that maybe could have come in contact with deli meats, or maybe they contain a little bit of deli meat or uncooked pork products, this can have active virus and it can spread to your pigs if it was contaminated. Another virus that does this is FMD, so foot and mouth disease. And so even if it's a bovine product, it could in theory technically contain foot and mouth disease. And again, our border control and our CFA are doing their best to prevent these products coming from countries that have active infections, but it's up to the producers to prevent it from entering their farms. The other thing is limiting the number of people that come onto your site. So if you have friends that were traveling or people that might have been traveling to other countries, always asking them if they've been on farm, making sure their boots and everything have been cleaned and disinfected and not brought to your site. But clean and disinfected when they're brought back to Canada, and that they wear new or different boots and clothes onto your site. And even better, if you provide them boots and coveralls on your site, that's probably the best bet, as well as a hand wash.
Now, I know a lot of swine veterinarians like yourself work mainly in large-scale production settings. What types of vets should these smaller swine farms contact to provide veterinary care to their pigs? Do they need someone who specializes in swine like yourself?
There's definitely swine vets who specialize in commercial practice that really enjoy working with small scale producers. Unfortunately, in the practice that I work at, I don't have ambulatory equipment necessarily. So I can't come to your farm and do an emergency surgery, and I can't take your animal back to my clinic to do a surgery. So having some support from a mixed animal practitioner is really critical, especially because as a consultant like myself, we don't always have a full service 24-hour care that is suited to the needs of a small-scale producer. Now, mixed animal practitioners do, but setting up this relationship ahead of time is really important. It's hard for a mixed animal practitioner to get out of the bed at 3 a.m. for a pig client that they've never met. And so in terms of setting that relationship up ahead of time, it's nice to have a veterinary client-patient relationship, so a VCPR, ahead of time, as well as having a veterinarian that you know is happy to come out to your site and has at the very least some experience with pigs, if not an affinity for pigs, before you end up in a situation where you need them. This is a bit of the groundwork that needs to be done by producers, but it's also something that associations like WeCan and some of the veterinary medical associations are trying to create a list of veterinarians that are available to provide this sort of support for producers. And so that's still a work in progress because it is a growing demand, and that growing demand is requiring growing numbers of veterinarians as well.
So then a list is in development, but not quite yet available. Would a producer maybe contact their provincial veterinary association then to get some information just in the short term?
Yeah, so contacting your local veterinary medical association for direction is a really great way to start. Calling around to a few local veterinary clinics, and if you come up dry there, then try calling a local swine specialty clinic because they've likely already been in contact with practices that deal with pigs, because I often have to refer my pig clients eventually to a mixed animal practitioner for ongoing care. And so I have a list of practitioners that I deal with, as well as I know are willing to take on a few more clients. So if you need to, contacting your local swine specialty clinic, that can also be helpful.
So you mentioned a veterinarian being called out at 3 a.m. for the first time. And that is a pretty common thing in mixed animal practice. We're often called out on emergency to treat a sick or a dying animal, or to address, you know, a major loss in a herd. It can be challenging to find a veterinarian who is able to attend that type of call without having any veterinary client-patient relationship in existence. Why is it so important for producers to contact a veterinarian before that emergency call on a preventative basis?
I think it's really important just because having someone call you at 3 a.m. for any emergency that you don't know that doesn't support your clinic on a daily basis, it's not because we don't want to come out to help, but because you're entering a situation where it's quite daunting in a number of different ways. And having that initial relationship helps you get organized so that you can be able to support that producer in the best way you can. It's part of the producer's responsibility to be able to create and set up that line of communication for the practitioner, because the practitioner doesn't necessarily know you're around. They don't know you're around until you come to the clinic. And ideally, you're coming to the clinic on a day where you can sit down with the veterinarian, or the veterinarian can come to your site and see what your operation's all about, as well as help you set up some herd health protocols, because then maybe you can help prevent some of those middle-of-the-night emergencies where there's a sick or dying pig or a really large loss. And then in the event that there is a situation like that in the middle of the night, then the practitioner knows where you live, they know what your site looks like, they know what equipment they're going to need, and they know you. And so they know how to work with you in an emergency so that you feel like you're supported and that you know you're calling the right person during that emergency. Because if you're just picking up the phone and calling any vet clinic, the closest vet clinic, it's a shot in the dark, and you could be paying an after hours fee for a vet that ideally they're going to be able to help you in some way, but maybe they can't help you to their fullest capacity because they don't have that information ahead of time.
Could you give an example then of maybe what a herd health plan might look like for one of these smaller scale production settings?
I really enjoy setting these up with producers because there's a lot that I think as a producer purchasing animals either for the first time or expanding their herd is not thought about. Because every single day I think about vaccination plans, vaccination timing,
for all stages of animals. Whereas as a producer or a livestock owner, you're thinking about feeding the animals, housing the animals, and transporting the animals, and just general everyday things for that specific animal. And you're not thinking about the big picture of diseases and all these different threats. Whereas that's my job, or a veterinarian's job. A herd health plan really looks like, okay, so we start before breeding. And before we breed the animal, what do we need to protect the pregnancy for? So we need to protect against, say, parvovirus, leptospirosis, and erysipelas. Those are all things that can impact your sow's ability to breed, as well as your boar's ability to breed, and then the ability for your sow to actually carry that pregnancy to term. Okay, so we've protected her for that with a vaccine. Now, during her pregnancy, my last batch of piglets had a lot of scour, diarrhea. And so this time I want to prevent that with a vaccine as well. So lots of cow herds use a scour vaccine that's given during pregnancy, just before calving. So the same thing happens in pigs, where we give a vaccine during pregnancy to prevent scour after the sow is farrowed. It helps build up immunity in the colostrum. And so now we've protected the piglets early on in the suckling period. And then we want to talk about, okay, what do the piglets need in the first 3 days? We have to talk about iron injections. Maybe if there's some compromised piglets, what they need for support. So do they need a little bit of extra dextrose for energy when they're born? Do they need extra colostrum? What do we support them with in the event they do get scour? But also, how do we make sure that we're going to get them to weaning? And at what age are we weaning? And on top of that, do we need to castrate them? Are we using these animals for breeding stock eventually? Or should we castrate them now because it's a lot easier than trying to sedate and anesthetize pigs when they're 6 months old and I'm realizing that I have to castrate it before it goes to slaughter? Because that is something that does happen, is we end up with a lot of producers needing last minute castrations before they send their pigs to slaughter because the slaughter plant won't accept a boar. And then once they wean, providing those preventative vaccinations, so the porcine circovirus and the erysipelas that I talked about, because those are two of the most preventable diseases that will cause some of the most costly financial losses to your herd. And you likely won't notice with porcine circovirus till it's much too late. And so a herd plan really encompasses all of that. And then it just starts over again. It starts over just before the next breeding. And we're also going to look at some deworming as well as feeding plans to make sure that they're receiving the appropriate nutrition for the different life stages. And so it's essentially just a support mechanism for everything you're doing on farm, that it would take you a ton of time to research everything and get through it all. And then on top of that, have to find those vaccines and find those products. Whereas certain veterinarians and certain swine practitioners just have that on hand and we could sort of like whip it up in 20 minutes. So it saves you a lot of time.
Not to mention having access to the newest, most exciting disease threats, I guess, that are emerging in the world of swine health. It is often said that where you have livestock, you have dead stock. Where can someone who's new to swine farming find information about how to properly dispose of animal remains? And what is the best way to dispose of a pig carcass safely?
So this is going to depend on your county, so your area of the country, depending on what the water table's like and what different regulations are in the county. So can you burn? Is there access to composting on your land? Is your water table really high or so you can't bury? But essentially, contacting someone from the county to get that information is going to be useful, but also having an idea of what's around you. So is there dead stock pickup? Do you have a rendering company that could take away your dead stock when you need to do that? And also, what's the cost of that? And what's the disease risk of having a rendering truck that goes to all these different farms picking up dead stock coming on your farm? And how can you maybe manage that ahead of time so that you're not putting yourself at risk last minute? I would say the best way to dispose of an animal carcass safely is going to be something called biovators or biodigesters. They're expensive. And so it's unlikely that a small farm is going to have them. Most big farms don't have them. But if I was going to choose my favorite way to dispose of an animal carcass, that's going to be it, because it basically it has minimal effect, environmental impact, and it also is very hygienic, and it basically produces a byproduct that can be used on fields. Other alternatives are burning, and burying. The thing to remember with burning is obviously where you do it and is it safe. And with burying is also minimizing how much it attracts wildlife. Another option is composting, but managing the compost is really important. So having it turned over and managing your compost pile so that it has the right temperature is something that has to be kept in mind.
What about if a producer is handling maybe aborted fetuses, for example, or if they're handling a pig that was sick, we don't know why, it's died, and we're disposing of those remains? Are there any human health and safety things we need to consider in those situations?
So anytime you're handling dead stock or sick animals, wearing the proper personal protective equipment, so gloves, possibly a mask, maybe like a face guard or face shield if that's what you prefer, or safety glasses just to prevent it from getting any sort of fluids getting in your eyes, but especially gloves, and then washing your hands after. And then if there's any fluids that happen to get anywhere, having a disinfecting powder. There's a couple powders that have disinfectant properties, or using an actual disinfectant spray to disinfect anywhere that those fluids got to allow you to just sort of contain any possible pathogens. And then keeping all that dead stock away from animals that maybe might come in contact with your family or other livestock. So especially dogs and cats, keeping the dead stock or aborted fetuses or tissues away from their reach or somewhere that they just are unlikely to access it, because you don't want the dog going and looking or eating something and then going and licking your kid's face. So all that is considerations that should be taken on a daily basis, and not just when something bad happens, but even when animals are sick or when you're handling animals, because every so often you'll have a case where maybe you weren't paying attention to it and then your pigs got sick the next day. They could have been shedding that disease the day prior. So just trying to prevent that transmission. We have had a couple cases of producers getting sick with salmonella, and they were wearing all the proper protective equipment, but they just didn't wash their hands when they went in to eat, is how we suspected they actually got salmonella. So definitely trying to make sure you're doing that on a day-to-day basis to protect your health as well as your family's.
And then on the other hand, when pigs have been raised successfully to market weight, where can a producer get information or find a list of local abattoirs for butchering services?
So I think the best place to go to would be your local pork board and your provincial government agriculture agency. The provincial governments are in charge of inspections, so they will have a list of all of the different abattoirs. And the local pork board will also have some contacts for the different abattoirs, as they will have this just through their association. I think these would be the best to contact for that information. The other option is something that is a little bit new, and actually as a result of COVID-19, as a result of what we saw with the slaughtering capacity, because it is a bit such a bottleneck into the slaughter plants, with there being slaughter capacity decreased during COVID-19, the Alberta and BC governments have allowed for increased on-farm slaughter. And I believe you're only allowed to consume the meat on your own or have the person who owns the animal use that meat for personal consumption. But it is an alternative to going to an abattoir. And so you can look for information for this from your local government. But I would also just advise that something else that you can gain from your veterinarian is on-farm food safety information. And if you're going to go this route where there's no food safety inspection, so the on-farm slaughter route, then I would highly recommend taking a look at some food safety regulations and requirements just to make sure that you are protecting yourself and whoever might be purchasing that meat.
Dr. Law, this has all been such helpful information. To wrap up, I'm going to ask you if you could please highlight the top three things that you think that these smaller scale swine producers can do to help keep their herd healthy. I think that would be a great way to summarize our chat.
Yeah, I think my top three for keeping their herd healthy would be to work with a veterinarian that has an idea what a herd health plan should look like and implement those vaccinations and those deworming protocols. And then working with either a pork board or your vet to implement some on-farm food safety practices.
And then lastly, but definitely not least, biosecurity. So finding a way to make your farm fit the mold of biosecurity. So we kind of see biosecurity videos copy and pasted, and they don't always fit our farms, but taking the principles and trying to find ways that you can make your farm as secure as possible, whether that's a boot change outside the pens, gloves, or having a minimum 3 days away from livestock before people come on your site, is going to be a really great way to just prevent as much as possible and minimize the loss when something does happen.
That's a great emphasis, I think, on biosecurity. And I think one of the benefits, too, of having a veterinarian and getting that herd health plan set up, when veterinarians come onto your site, they're essentially, you know, a fresh pair of eyes for your biosecurity program. And so some of the things, even if you can read and learn all you possibly can, just having that outside perspective as far as entering the farm and entering the premises, I think that will go a long way to help protecting these pigs. Thank you so much, Dr. Law, for sharing all of this with us today. It's a ton of great information, I think, that we've got in a short period of time here, and a bunch of great resources for folks to access.
Thank you so much for having me, Kate. I really appreciated it.
I really hope this will be helpful for producers who are working in these smaller scale swine farming operations. If you're looking for more information on swine health and disease prevention that is specific for Western Canada, do contact your local producer groups and make sure that you check out the Western Swine Health Intelligence Network website, as well as the Western Canadian Animal Health Network at wecan.ca.